is that there is a greater field of consciousness. There is consciousness is a field. There's a consciousness field where all information is resonating right here and now, past, present, future.
I personally believe, you know, that it's holographic theory, quantum mechanics, and entanglement. Everything in the universe is connected, and we're just accessing that information. If we go by the laws of physics and everything in the universe is entangled, our thoughts are entangled with each other, and they affect each other.
In that instant, I realized that everything we do, think, say, everything about us, everything about our existence is somehow recorded and accessible to other consciousness. That once you do that, you're profoundly changed. So we're going to a digital currency where everything in your life, Sarah, is going to be tokenized. Everything you do, say, think, talk about is going to be tokenized and recorded on a blockchain. If we, cryptocurrency is the future. Cryptocurrency is global. Cryptocurrency is borderless. If the future of our money is global and borderless, you're not going to have nation states. It's going to be a global control mechanism without nation states.
Finally, I am able to offer Bill Andrews' amazing new anti-aging dietary supplement with TAM. I have been wanting this since I learned about its discovery approximately 4 years ago. At that time, it was not available as an oral supplement, but now, Define Time with TAM is here. This amazing product counteracts and suppresses the fundamental cause of aging, telomere shortening. TAM improves biological health in skin, vessels, brain, and bone. Specifically, it works to lengthen telomeres in cells, leading to younger and healthier cells. Currently, Define Time with TAM is the most effective anti-aging compound available in the world today. Listeners will receive a 5% discount using code SARAH5. Be sure to use this every time you buy. It will also work in conjunction with other offers. See additional research and learn more with the link below. Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have a really fun show happening right now with three amazing remote viewers. I've had my patrons tell me I really need to interview these guys. They are the best. Cliff High recommended them. My patrons wanted them. Many people wanted me to bring these guys on. Their names are Dick Geyer, Edward Reardon, and Daz Smith, and they are so much fun to talk to. They really focus on cryptocurrencies from a remote viewing standpoint, but we get into all sorts of things, and I think there's something for everyone in this interview. We first start with what remote viewing is, because, you know, my audience is filled with people who really understand remote viewing to people who are like, I don't know if I really get into remote viewing. So we first talk about that. And we also bring up the interview that I did with Ken Schwartz about the fact that so many of our inventions are claimed to come through remote viewing. You know, like Nikola Tesla claimed that he got it through dreams and through remote viewing. He didn't call it remote viewing, but he explained it like it was. There's Indian mathematicians. I mean, all through, if you look at so many of the greatest inventions in history, they claim to have got it through some kind of process like this. So it's really fascinating what this is all about. And we really dive into it. And in fact, to the point where it's kind of the edge of their understanding, and they start debating and asking each other questions, which made it even more fun. So I really hope that you watch this in its entirety, because the end there's topic after topic, and there's something for everyone in the show. And then at the end, they talk about these goblins, and they did this show with, and he explains what this is in this documentary series and this amazing stuff they viewed on this documentary series, and he explains what that's about. And that's going to be airing with this show. Same time we put this show up, that is going to be airing. So you can go to their YouTube channel and watch that as well. And they have a lot of stuff going on Patreon, so you can go to their Patreon channel. And I have a lot of stuff going on Patreon. Like I said, I'm being censored so heavily on YouTube. My podcast, however, has grown by over 40% this last month. My website, almost the same amount. Really growing, but my YouTube channel has not been growing that fast, and the views are down quite a bit. So obviously they're not wanting people to see my show, but other avenues are growing very quickly. So I think people like my show. So the only way we're going to get past the censorship is to share these shows, sign up for my podcast, watch it wherever you can, talk about this with your friends, and try to get this information out there. And, you know, go directly, sign up for my newsletter. That's about the best way to reach me, because my newsletter, if you're not getting notifications on YouTube, you want to subscribe. But if the notifications are not coming to you, you will get it through my newsletter regardless. And then you can listen to it on podcast or video, wherever it is. I'm on BitChute. I'm on Library now. So it's getting out there. And almost every place podcasts, you can get my interview. So let's get into this amazingly interesting conversation on remote viewing right now. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for joining the show. I am really excited to have you on. I have been wanting to do a remote viewing. Actually, I've had so many of my Patreons tell me I need to be doing a show with a remote viewer. And I've had, some of my other guests tell me I should be getting some remote viewers on, and they recommended that I talk to you all, that you are the best out there. So that's kind of neat that you are on my show right now. But can you help me understand, because I have my listening audience will be anywhere from people who are very familiar with remote viewing to people who kind of think it's, you know, what the heck is this? It's not, it's kind of goofy. So I get the whole spectrum. And, you know, I did do a show with, oh my God, Sarah, with Purple Power, with Kenneth Schwartz.
Ken Schwartz.
I can't believe this is me, like when I'm yelling at my kids and I have to go through all the dogs and the family and everything else before I say my daughter's name right. talk to Ken. I know Ken's name. So I'm sorry, Ken. But Ken Schwartz, yeah, and he, we did a show on remote viewing, and not on like specific, because he doesn't do remote viewing as much, but all the different scientists who major discoveries that have, who claim they saw it through remote viewing, and they might not have called it that, but it was essentially that. And, you know, from Tesla and, you know, mathematicians and just amazing stuff. But can you explain what remote viewing really is? Any one of you?
Daz, why don't you start? We'll all do it, but go Daz, Edward, and then me. Just
okay. Remote viewing is basically using your natural intuitive or psychic ability, but not in the classical sense where, you know, you would, in the old days, you would sit across from a psychic and they would tell you things. With everything we do with remote viewing, we do it within a framework of what we call scientific protocols, and that that makes it more scientific. So everything we do is essentially blind. So we never know what we're doing up front. Everything's hidden behind a like a little secret kind of code word or number. So essentially we work blind and we work on projects where there's feedback to assess how accurate we are. But other than that, it's just being naturally psychic, but within rules.
Yeah, we'll probably each have our own our own definition of it. We'll put them all together into one. But for me, remote viewing, it's a combination of a process and an experience. The processing happens in our minds as we are attempting to perceive remote location in time and space. We don't know what that is. Like Daz is saying, we're kept blind to it. We don't know what it is. That information somehow is acquired by some portion of our brain. It goes through our mental processing and comes out in things that we can understand and describe and experience. So there's a processing involved, and then the experience is almost like a kind of a virtual type of experience of a remote location in time and space, and we describe that experience. That's my explanation of it. Dick, what do you think?
My definition is that remote viewing is a natural communication skill. The goal is to set up a communication pathway between your primary awareness and your subconscious awareness so that you can, on demand, have moments of non-local awareness. And the way I've evolved into understanding this over doing it for more than 20 years is that there is a greater field of consciousness. There is consciousness is a field. There's a consciousness field where all information is resonating right here and now, past, present, future, distant locations. We as human beings have our own localized consciousness. Sometimes, and Sarah, I know this has happened to you, you've had a moment where you just knew something that you shouldn't know, right? As a mother, as a friend that hasn't called you in a while, that you suddenly think of them, you have a bad feeling, something's going to happen, it happens. You've had that, haven't you?
Well, you know, it just happened to me today. I usually connect with people. We're on the same brainwave. You know, it's like you almost don't have to. Like, I sent an article to a scientist today, and he was right in the middle of doing the same thing. It was pretty interesting, on the same topic, working on it. So those kinds of things happen to me a lot.
Yeah, so it's a natural thing that all people have. And as remote viewers, we all use a protocol, a methodology that focuses our awareness so that we can kind of shunt our primary awareness into the background and make that leap. So there are a number of different, like Daz uses a different method than I use, and Edward uses a slightly different, you know, more of a hybrid. But it's natural to all of us. It's just a matter of taking the time to do the discipline to learn how to open that pathway.
How would you compare to like Michelle Whitedove, who's a great psychic? I mean, she's just been proven to be good at what she does. How do you compare like psychics to remote viewers? Is it essentially the same thing? They just describe it differently?
Daz, you started more on the psychic end, didn't you? Why didn't you?
Yeah, I trained, since the age of 12, I trained in classical psychic techniques. So I started off as a clairvoyant, medium, channeler, healer type person. But the process with doing it that way, doing it in the classical way, is that the process is in charge. It's a bit archaic. So you don't really get to do what you do psychically on demand. It's more spontaneous. It's more archaic. You don't have any control over it. But what we're taught as remote viewers is we're essentially taught to be the passenger. It's almost like being in a car. The classical way of doing things, you're the passenger in the car. And as you're going along the road, you're looking out and you're seeing things pass you by. But you can't drive the car because you're the passenger. But when you become a remote viewer, you're essentially in the driver's seat of the car. So you can stop the car, have a look around. You can then start the car again, go back on your journey. And that's what being a trained remote viewer does, really, is it allows us, over the 20-odd years we've all been doing it, it allowed us to know ourselves internally, so we know what we're feeling and seeing. The remote viewing process allows us to be in control of a psychic process.
Well, do you think?
I would say that.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I would say that psychics are naturally wired to have this communication pathway open. They've got something about them. They don't have quite the same filters we do. So that other greater field of consciousness comes in unfiltered. And what remote viewers do is sit down and intentionally create that pathway and shunt those filters aside. As you, the more that you remote view, the more psychic you become. You have more moments where it's happening naturally to you without sitting down in a formal session, because you're opening up the communication pathway.
Well, so can anyone do this, or do you have to be do you have to have some natural abilities in the first place?
Well, we might all have an opinion on that one too. I think that everyone is probably wired to it, but like anything else, you'll probably find some that are just a little more naturally better. I mean, anybody can pick up a guitar, but few people are going to get up on stage and really be able to do it. So it's kind of, you got to have some natural ability to get through the difficulty of the learning process. Remote viewing is a difficult process to learn because you have to go through a lot of failure while going through the learning of how information is being processed in the brain. And a lot of people have, you know, that's a tough one to get through. So I think a lot of people don't make it past that. If they did, maybe we'd have more remote viewers.
Yeah, well, I was reading a CIA study that said that 2% of the people are naturally prone to be good at this. I don't know if they're accurate or not. Just because it came out of the CIA doesn't mean it's the end-all, be-all of knowledge. But that's what their study showed. Would you agree with that? I mean, it's kind of almost like a pro athlete or a really good athlete. 2% is probably about who could be good at it.
I think in later studies, it was even less than that. I think it was to become a world-class remote viewer, it was less than 1% of the world's population.
Well, it'd be like a world-class tennis player, a runner, anything. You'd probably be less than that. So it's like, kind of in line with any kind of talent, I would think.
But yeah. on the other hand, if you're taking facts and figures like that, you have to look at the sample size. I often ask people, you know, have you ever tried to do this? Have you ever, you know, somebody gives you a target ID, A1, B2, C3, D4, and they have a picture that represents. If you've never tried it, you might surprise yourself. So a lot more people would be surprised if they ever, I randomly, you know, I've taught classes where you have 20, 30 people and you just say, okay, if you've never tried this, tell them what this target is. And especially with the first timers effect, I think more people than you might realize would have a knack for this.
And if they have an open mind that they could do it, then maybe they could.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's controversy on whether when you do remote viewing, whether you're actually going to a location and viewing it, or you're really seeing somebody else's consciousness in that location. What are your thoughts on that? Are you really able to personally be at a new location, or are you viewing that experience through someone else's eyes?
Well, there's a lot of examples out there that show that remote viewing is not some type of telepathic thing across the board, in that there are plenty of examples where, and let's say an outbounder experiment was taking place where you had a viewer in a room somewhere, and you have somebody that goes to a distant location somewhere, and at a certain time, they tell the viewer, okay, describe where the person is right now. Wherever the person is, they can, they're looking around and they're seeing things. And the viewer, wherever they are, they may be describing that. But there are a lot of examples where the viewer described things that the outbounder did not look at. So the viewer, they go there and they're investigating the area that they were just viewing. And the viewer goes over here and goes over there, places where the outbounder did not go, and sees some perceptions that they were getting. So I think there may be an element of telepathy in there, and then maybe a small amount, and then the rest of it is something that is more unknown or more difficult to define.
Yeah,
I agree with that, yeah. But I also don't think that there's any evidence whatsoever that a remote viewer has ever traveled to a target. I think we just, as remote viewers, access universal information about that target that's recorded somewhere. I don't think we actually go to targets.
Can you be messed with?
I disagree with that.
Oh, go ahead.
I think we do go to target. I think part of you goes to the place in its own time and space and brings back information. How would it be otherwise?
Sorry, just
quantum mechanics.
Pick the right topic for us to have a great conversation about.
No, this is great.
Entanglement.
Well, couldn't you access, like he was saying, you're almost accessing this global database, kind of this endless universal database, and you're accessing the information versus transporting to another place. And that's what you are disagreeing about, I'm hearing. Well, could another...
This is the problem we have with remote viewing, is that with the 40 years of study they did, and you know, the CIA and the military spent, I think, 23 years and 20 million trying to work out how this works. And even now, 20 years after they closed the program down, we still, as remote viewers and as practitioners, don't know how remote viewing works. And that is kind of a big problem that we have within the field, really, because until we do know how it works, we can't refine those edges to improve that much more. But yeah, I personally believe, you know, that it's holographic theory, quantum mechanics, and entanglement. Everything in the universe is connected, and we're just accessing that information. But you know, none of us have got the full picture on this yet.
Well, theoretically, it could be both. But go ahead.
Could be both.
Yeah. Let me ask Daz and Edward a question then. Get to narrow this down. Do you believe that you are remote viewing the feedback? I don't believe we're remote viewing the feedback. There are some that say, well, you're sending yourself into the future and you're seeing the feedback that someone's giving you.
I think if either the tasker or the remote viewer or the analyst thinks at some point I want the remote viewer to look at the feedback, then I think then that becomes part of the target.
Well, that goes to intent in the tasking, but we've all seen dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of instances. Well, okay, first of all, have you ever successfully remote view without feedback? I know I have. I've done targets for which I've never gotten feedback, and
I think that's the answer to the question, is that we're not remote viewing the feedback, in my opinion. I agree we're not, because we've successfully remote viewed things where we did not get feedback.
Okay, so we're not remote viewing the feedback.
Right.
Okay, next question. Are we remote viewing the mind of the tasker? Are we only remote viewing what the tasker? Well, but haven't you seen dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of situations where you bring back valid data that was unknown to the tasker?
Yes, but I've also seen a handful of sessions where the remote viewer have got information that only exists in the tasker's head, and it never exists anywhere but that.
That's true, and I've done several of those myself, but that's only under a certain circumstance. I mean, when we remote view the future events, those are unknown. So those are not in the tasker's mind. Those exist somewhere in some realm of time and space that we're picking up on.
But I think what the problem we're trying to do here is we're trying to simplify things, and I don't think remote viewing is either or. I think it's a scale of all these. I think it's feedback. I think it's telepathy. I think it's probably direct contact with the target, and I think it's probably parts of stuff in the universal matrix. I think it's everything all combined.
As you're trying to figure it out. Now, could another consciousness mess with your results?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, I've had that happen,
yeah.
What do you mean?
Because all consciousness is connected, you see, because it's entangled. You know, if we go by the laws of physics and everything in the universe is entangled, our thoughts are entangled with each other, and they affect each other.
So
I have a great example of that actually captured on video. Of the tasker's intent to throw me off.
Who did you go after? I mean, who were you trying to read?
Well, it was an interesting task, because the target only existed in the tasker's mind. It was an idea, but the way he set up the task was to see if he could protect his intellectual property, which was his idea. And so in the tasking, he put into the tasking that if I hit the target, that it would trigger another target to come forward, if that makes any sense.
And did it work?
It worked for about 8 seconds until I was like, that target's not interesting anymore. This is the one that I'm interested in. But it was captured on video, which was really cool.
Well, that's probably a whole nother study. You know, how do we?
Here's the most interesting moment in my life. the first time I remote viewed, when I did a session blind, and I saw a person, a man in an overcoat, walking through a store, a department store, touching clothing. And I thought, that's the weirdest little dream I just had. I wonder if that's the target. And I got the feedback, and it was an outbounder, and the guy said, oh, I'm in a second store, second floor of this PX. It's a men's style department store. I'm walking through men's clothing. And in that instant, I realized that everything we do, think, say, everything about us, everything about our existence is somehow recorded and accessible to other consciousness. That once you do that, you're profoundly changed.
Wow.
And that, I'm sure the other guys agree, have had the same experience.
Yeah, that's a great, I love that story. That's an excellent example.
Wow, that is really interesting. Now, that gets me to the point where can the past be changed? And does that change the future? And, you know, are you able to interact with the past in a way that affects the future when you're remote viewing?
That's really super advanced stuff. And we did a group I was working with did some work on that. I knew some ex-military remote viewers that were contacted by the family of a victim of the Titanic, a little girl named Etta Anderson, who perished. She was 11 years old and she died on the Titanic. And the remote viewers remote viewed her death. She was down below in the lower classes. And as it started getting really hectic, they were all rushing out and trying to find their way to a lifeboat. And there was a moment when she should have turned left and she turned right and she got caught and she didn't get to the lifeboat. They were trying to determine their goal of their experiment was to try to nudge her to go left. The problem is, as a remote viewer on target, you have so little effect on the target. Like, could they were struggling with this for session after session, how to get her to turn left and save her life. How would that have changed things? What would have happened differently?
They tried to pick somebody who might have affected the future the least. I mean, because there can be some dire consequences on changing the future, but keep going.
May have grown up to be somebody very special that might
have changed
the world, but
it could have been any better. Yeah.
There was another one that we did, and I have a video that I presented at the International Remote Viewers Conference called A Message to the Past. And we tasked a viewer with a historical, it was a the Matthew Brady, the Civil War photographer. And this viewer did an hour session telling everything about Matthew Brady and how he worked. And it took us days to verify all the information. And later he found a photo of Matthew Brady in the Library of Congress, a photo of him from 1975, and tried to affect that, tried to write a message in it. And it's too lengthy to go into here, but here's the question.
Or is it just he was trying and it didn't penetrate?
Well, we think it did. Yeah, we think it did. There's, you can go look at the picture and you can see this hazy little, he wrote a message.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Heads, GW. But to take it to the broader theoretical picture, if you remote view, information has to move across time. Wouldn't Daz and Edward, would you guys agree? If you successfully remote view, if you remote view the Battle of Gettysburg and you get information about death and shooting guns, information from that time has traveled. It's gone from there into your consciousness. So information moves.
Somehow, yeah. Somehow.
Well,
how can it work if information doesn't, if information is in Gettysburg, and now it's in your head, it has to.
at the quantum level, and you know, we're made up of the quantum mechanics and the quantum level, the very particles we're made of, the quantum mechanics shows us now through entanglement that particles exist in more than one space at more than one time. So, you know, a particle from me can exist here, and it can be over right behind Edward's shoulders there at the exact same time. And particles from everything that exists in the universe can also move forward or backward in time at the same time. So I don't know. Does things need to move?
But I think it's everything is moving anyway. I don't know if anything is static.
Here's the question is, if you go to a distant location and bring back information about it, information goes from that to your paper. Can you take information to that time and place, and can you affect the target? That's the question. Can you affect the target in its own time?
Well,
that's a good
spice of life, man. This is what
that would be. That would be a great experiment. And no one's asked me to be a part of anything like that yet, but I would like to do it.
You'd have to move data. You'd have to move information to their time zone from yours somehow. Yeah. So, okay, let's go.
We should try that.
I did a series of experiments where I was doing a remote viewing session first thing in the morning, and I was remote viewing myself in at night, remote influencing myself in the morning. And then, so I would document what I was experiencing there and then go through the day and then at night be remote influencing myself in the past, what had taken place during that chunk of time.
For example,
I had to stop doing it because I was starting to go a little nuts.
But there's movies where people do that, but how did you, where they leave notes for themselves, how did you, give us an example of something that you tweaked.
Well, it would be a process of doing a remote viewing. Okay, I'm doing my remote viewing session in the morning, and I'm trying to pick up perceptions from myself, sending me information from the future about something about the day ahead of me. And I would document my whatever I was perceiving. At night, I would be doing a remote influencing session, attempting to project that information that I had already experienced back to myself. And so how did it affect me? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I was just using an example, where you actually could learn.
Well, my perception of reality was starting to get a little altered, so I had to stop doing it.
Well, you could really focus on winning the lottery.
Almost drove me crazy too.
Well, why don't you do an experiment where you just try to win the lottery and just focus on that one thing and see if it works.
It's not as fun. It's just not as fun.
It's not as fun to win a couple million dollars.
When you bring up the lottery, that's like trying to predict the price of Bitcoin next week.
Which is another thing we want to talk about.
We've had mixed results with that.
And why?
It's really hard.
Why can't we predict cryptocurrency prices?
Okay, that's a good question for all of us. I'll start and then the other two can think about it while I give my... I would say because it is an incredibly noisy environment, it is so volatile. It has so much... just so many people focusing on it, so many emotions, it's so volatile.
That makes sense.
And numbers in price has no real meaning to your subconscious. Your subconscious is in a place where $100 at $10,000 doesn't compute. Gross sensory data is much easier to get as a remote viewer. So if you're looking at the price of Bitcoin next week, in yen, in dollars, in gold, in emotional fulfillment, what the price of Bitcoin has so many different meanings. And in that greater consciousness field to your subconscious, it's hard to narrow down the definition, but it's just very, very volatile.
Well, taking that a step, could you find a target who has a lot of money invested in Bitcoin and see what their emotions are later over Bitcoin to know whether it goes up or not?
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're doing. That's what
we do. That we do that every month.
Okay, that's how you have to do it.
Well, that's not how, but that's one of the things we do look at every time we do a crypto target. You know, so someone picks a cryptocurrency for us to look at. We each of us go away. We at some point in our remote viewing, we do kind of say, okay, the people that are holding this crypto, what's their group sentiment like in 12 months? How are they feeling internally about this target in 12 months time? And that gives us an idea if they're feeling happy or if they're feeling sad. So we do similar effects that because emotions do reach across time and space quite well. But we also, you know, we all also have had some good accuracy ratings in predicting what Bitcoin's going to do. So it's not all bad news. It's just as Dick said, it is very a noisy project. And the fact that cryptocurrencies don't physically exist as well, on top of the fact that it's all numbers, it makes it that little bit harder.
And another thing too is that you know, we don't sit and try to think, well, is Bitcoin going to go up or down? We don't work that way, because one of the reasons why I wouldn't like to work that way is because I'm emotionally involved with the question. So I want Bitcoin to go up. And so right off the bat, I'm going to be biased to the answer. So we work blind, even with all the cryptos that we work, we're blind. We don't know what the crypto is. It could be Bitcoin. It could be some crypto we've never even heard of. We're completely blind to it, so we're going into that one without our emotional attachments on our sleeve, you know, because otherwise, you know, I want Bitcoin to go up, so of course I'm going to think that it's going to go up.
And see, at the moment, I'm different from Edward, because I want Bitcoin to go down, because it's too high for me at the moment. I want it to go back down to $3,000. Yeah, I want it to go back down to $3,000 so I can buy a bunch.
Oh, it's your fault, Daz, you bastard. Yeah.
But this is where the noise is coming from, you see, that Dick was on about. You know, we have millions of people wanting Bitcoin. You know, you have a proportion of them that want it to go down. You have a proportion of them that are confused, and another proportion that want it to go up. So all these consciousnesses are all making a real big noise.
It really is noisy. It is a noisy space. It's a big conference hall, and it's packed.
Well, let's talk about something that probably is also noisy, is what's going to happen when this whole economy resets, because we do know that our dollar is, you know, MIT even said that by 2032, I believe. I mean, it can't keep going up at this rate without splitting to the point where it has no value anymore. So what's going to happen after they pull this out and go to cryptocurrencies, which is what everyone thinks is going to happen? What's it going to look like? What are you seeing?
I'm going to take that one, Dick.
Okay. This is not from remote. Well, a little bit of it's from remote viewing, but because of my remote viewing, Sarah, I've had two mentors in my life. I had one that taught me for 20 years remote viewing, and I worked real hard. And because of my remote viewing, I got some attention. Well, all three of us did, from some other people. And we've been we're being given some instructions, some crumbs laid out, and we're able to do our own research and find out what's going on, partially through remote viewing and partially through our own study and talks with people that are pretty influential and knowledgeable. We're going to a new digital economy. We're in the transition right now. You're right. The dollar is going to die, and we remote viewed that. And let me throw in a quick plug. Patreon.com/cryptoviewing, and you can see some of our work on this subject. We did a couple sessions on the dollar and when and how it's going to go, and it is going to go. I've always believed in gold. I have purchased some gold and silver because it's been a good store of wealth. But now what's really going to happen is it's going to be cryptocurrency. The people that steer this world and guide this world and run this world, decided it decades ago. They had this plan. They knew how it would work. They've just been waiting for mobile computing devices, smartphones, 5G, to be up and running so that the computation can be done. So we're going to a digital currency where everything in your life, Sarah, is going to be tokenized. Everything you do, say, think, talk about is going to be tokenized and recorded on a blockchain. It's a little bit bleak. What you need to know right now is that you need to get some cryptocurrency so that when this new system comes online, you'll be well enough off that you'll be able to cope with it. Because gold isn't, I love gold, but it's not going to be gold that's going to save us. You're not going to spend gold. You're not going to carry gold around. You're going to need to be mobile. We're all going to have digital identities. That's a whole other show, but yeah, we are going to cryptocurrency, and I don't believe it's good guys versus bad guys. I don't believe that we're going to, quote, overthrow the bankers. The bankers don't run this world. The bankers just siphon off some of the money to help run it. The control mechanism is far above the bankers.
So
I'll stop ranting here.
Well, who is that control mechanism?
Well, how high do you want to go?
Could
be off
it.
Planet.
Are you
control on Earth?
Yeah. Are you seeing that when you remote view what the control structure is?
Well, little bits here and there, but some of it we don't publish. I've done some sessions that I've just been told, like, don't. It'd be better if we didn't put that out.
Does it scare you?
The control mechanism is old families. It's families that go back to like Babylonian, way, way earlier civilizations. And knowledge is handed down from, if you're a member of a certain elite, you get an education that the rest of us don't get. And so the real knowledge and the real control structure is hidden and has always been hidden. And it works out in plain sight.
Do they live longer? Are they living humans, or are they just humans that happen to get a different education and have more control and money?
That's the question I'm going to ask my teacher next time I get on the line with him. That's the question that I'm to that point where I'm going to ask that. Yeah, are the elite different? Are their bloodlines, are they physically different, or is it just the health care that they get because they get better health care?
Yeah. I mean, we you know, it's a fact, you know, because I'm pretty up on this, that the less money you have, the less your life expectancy is. So, you know, the more money and wealth and stuff you have, the better health care you can afford. But saying, you know, the bloodline thing is interesting because, you know, I've looked at that for many years, you know, with the bloodline of Jesus and, you know, Mary Magdalene, all that kind of stuff. I think bloodline probably does have some kind of prominence in this, but I don't think we've been set that as a remote viewing target. It's all these are great questions you're asking, which would make fantastic targets for us to do in the future.
Yeah, it's really interesting to know what, you know, what that's all about. But then let's get back to what the reality will be once the dollar collapses. We will go to some kind of crypto digital currency on a blockchain. Now, will society change fundamentally? Will there be a whole shift of hierarchy changes, you know, power shifts and things?
But it's happening now, isn't it, day to day? I mean, I was at the coffee shop today, and I would say, you know, seven out of the 10 people in the queue in front of me were paying for their coffees with their smartphones. You know, they were using Apple Pay and Google Pay. So we're all inching into it every month as we're doing it now. It's just that, you know, it's one of these slow progressions that we're all doing, and we don't realize we're doing it until we're actually in the process of being involved. But I think we all got one foot in the door. I mean, you know, I got my bank card is contactless. So every time I pay for anything now, I just go like that with it on a little device. It beeps and I make the payment.
Well, it's so hard not to. When I get my Starbucks, I can order mobile before I get there so that when I get there, it's done and ready to go. Plus, I get extra points and get free stuff. So I'm like, oh, I don't want to wait. So I'm going to do it on my mobile. Yeah. But
we're all the same. We're all lazy. We all want convenience. And we're unwittingly
exactly
in there. You know, our foot is in the door of this already. Yeah, it's inevitable. And that's what we as a group have realized. It's inevitable. And we're just lucky that we're on the crest of this wave, you know, because we're talking about the Wild West here in cryptocurrency. You know, there are no regulations. It's chaos out there. And we see the future and how it's coming. So, we are there already.
Well, Sarah, go ahead.
Here's a question. If cryptocurrency is the future, cryptocurrency is global, cryptocurrency is borderless. If the future of our money is global and borderless, you're not going to have nation states. It's going to be a global control mechanism without nation states.
Assuming money is the only control mechanism, I suppose you can still have,
the control mechanism will be the blockchain.
If we can still control our republic and how we're structured with, or if it's the money completely controls everything. I would say we could still maintain, inventions. We can still maintain what we invest in. We can still maintain that it's legal to have medical advances here versus everybody having to go like it is now to other countries. You know, the medical tourism industry is so massive because we've messed up the FDA and the whole industry, Big Pharma, has messed up our country in that way. And so anybody who needs to do advances, go to other countries because we can't get it done here. It's too expensive. So medical tourism is booming and Americans with money go elsewhere to get their medicine taken care of. Those kinds of things are separate from the who controls the financial stuff. But yeah, you're right. Nationless, if you think of it all based on money. That's scary for people.
Well, what
censorship. Go ahead.
What government is in place today in the Bahamas? They have a hurricane parked over them in the greatest disaster. They have no government. This could have, if you had the right natural disaster, the government of the United States could fail quite quickly. If California fell off into the ocean, massive, you could have climate changes, and I'm not talking about man-made global warming. I'm talking about what if we went into a mini ice age? You couldn't grow anything in Iowa, Nebraska, Montana. You'd have to move south. So what would happen to our government? What would happen? Are you going to carry your gold with you? Like, okay, I have a suitcase full of my wealth is in my
So
gold.
Is that what you're seeing? Are you seeing that with remote viewing? Are you seeing that there's going to be a mini ice age and that the majority of the food is going to be grown farther south?
Well, there are other people saying that. There's a website called Adapt 2030. Are you familiar with that one?
I'm not familiar with that, but I am familiar with the mini ice age concept and the fact that food is going to be hard to grow north. But are you seeing that when you remote view?
We haven't been targeted that with that specific target that far ahead of them. I mean, again, it's a great question. It'd be a great target. I don't think
I can give you so many things to look at. there's also
and this is one of the problems we have as remote viewers, because we all would love to work these kind of targets, but sometimes, you know, I have targets that I've wanted to work and I've had to wait decades because everything we do has to be blind. We can't self-target ourselves, so we have to wait till someone blindly gives it to us. So I've waited decades for some of the targets I've wanted to work.
What do you mean?
Have you heard about plasma energy and all the amazing healing potential it has?
Many have experienced how plasma energy can help your body. Recent university tests have shown the effectiveness of balancing plasma energy and putting your body back into biological balance. Tests have shown success in lab animals and human beings by altering conditions of cancer, AIDS, diabetes, malaria, Ebola, E. coli, high blood pressure, brain issues in adults and children, and many other imbalances in the body. Learn more from Dr. Paul and researcher Lynn Schmaltz and how they are using plasma energy to help people heal. See the link below.